Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the AXA conference call for the release of the nine-month activity indicators. I will now hand over to Andrew Wallace-Barnett. Sir, please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to the AXA conference call on our activity indicators for the 9 months of 2015. Gerald Harlow, our Group CFO, would like to give you a quick overview of the main figures included in the press release, which we issued last night and which I know many of you have found, and it's on our website. Following that, Gerald will be happy to answer your questions. Gerald, I hand over to you.
Hello, good morning, and thank you, Andrew. Indeed, before moving to the Q&A session, let me give you an overview of the main figures for these 9 months. We have continued to see growth across all business lines, with total revenues up 2% on a comparable basis and 9% on a reported basis to 76 billion euros. The higher level of reported numbers is coming from the strengthening of all major currencies versus the euro. The reported growth in the period illustrates the benefits of the geographical diversification of the group. Let's start with life and savings. On life and savings, growth momentum continued with 8% APE growth. We continued to see strong top-line performance in Southeast Asia, India, China region, plus 21%, France, plus 11%, and the rest of continental Europe, mainly as a result of our success in hybrid and pure unit-linked products, and the US, plus 5%. We also had a very good performance in the UK with high sales of corporate pension schemes, underlining the strength of our UK life business. This growth more than offsets the negative impact of the regulatory changes in Hong Kong, minus 10%, which are impacting our unit-linked business, the repositioning of the group life products mix in Switzerland, minus 14%, and the continued strategy of curtailing general account savings business. Overall, the NBV margin remains strong at 32%, a decrease of 2 points year-on-year. The key impact were a less favorable mix, mainly due to the high sales of the UK corporate pension scheme and the negative impact of lower interest rates in the US VA products, which more than offset an improvement in margin in other countries. Life and savings net flows for the quarter were strongly up at 9.1 billion euros versus 2.8 billion euros in the 9 months last year. We saw strong inflows in both protection and health and unit-linked businesses and outflows in general account savings, totally in line with our strategy. P&C revenues grew at 1%. In fact, it's 1.4% to be more detailed versus last year. Price increases were 2.3% on average. In a competitive market, we remain committed to selling profitable business, as was the case at the half year. In mature markets, we continue to increase prices, mainly in France, the UK and Ireland, and Germany, while at the same time focusing on more selective underwriting, notably in Spain and in construction in France. High growth markets revenues increased by 4% as we continue to improve the business mix, notably in Turkey and Mexico, and increased prices. Direct revenues were up 7%, mostly driven by strong volume growth, mainly in the UK, France and Japan, and tariff increases, mainly in the UK, France and South Korea. International insurance revenues increased by 9%, reflecting the strong growth of AXA Assistance with third-party clients, notably with new large accounts won recently in the UK, Italy, and France. Asset management business had strong net inflows at 32 billion, with 27 billion net inflows at AXA IM and 5 billion at AB. Economic solvency ratio was estimated at around 212%, down 3% versus June 30th, 2015. As the negative impact of financial market exposure was partially offset by operating return contribution. I would like to take the opportunity to remind you that we plan to share with you our capital management framework at the beginning of December this year. It will be on the 3rd of December. We have fixed this date, and the presentation will be held in the late afternoon at our London offices. I'm now happy to answer your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. The first question is from Paul Diaz, RBC.
Yeah, hi, good morning. I've got a couple of questions, if I may. Firstly, on the P&C business, obviously there's you've sort of been through a bit of the stuff on the price increases, but there seem to be quite significant price increases in the quarter. How much of that is, would you say, is kind of AXA specific, and how much is sort of any market hardening in any of those markets that you've been raising the prices in? That's question one. And the second point is just on the UK corporate sort of institutional pension sales that have come through in the quarter. They're obviously much lower margin than a lot of the other stuff you have in the life business. I just wanted to sort of get some clarification on this. So are these essentially asset management mandates? And if so, where do the earnings come through? Do they come through in the life business, or do they go into the asset management business? Thanks.
Okay. As far as the price increases are concerned, you can see on the press release on page 15 the tariff increases by country and business lines, and you can notice that on personal lines we are at 2.5, on commercial lines at 2.1. There is, without any doubt, hardening in the UK with 4.8 on personal lines, and in Ireland, as you know. We could say also that there are some countries, some specific countries, where are some price increases, which on a relative basis have increased. The trend is increased in the third quarter, and that's Turkey, for example, and Mexico. So that's mostly what I can tell you about these price increases. You can see that we still have a capacity to increase prices, which is quite strong, which is a good news. In line with our strategy to keep a strong profitability. On your second question about UK corporate tip, I could say that from an accounting point of view, it's not accounted for as revenues, meaning that it's considered as a deposit, so it's considered as I would say just like an asset management, but that's not asset management because it's a real insurance contract. But of course, it's an insurance contract with a low capital requirement, which makes a difference with most other contracts. But it's really an insurance contract, but you know that that's what we call the deposit accounting under the IFRS rules. That means that contracts which are considered more as deposit, also being real insurance contracts, are accounted for directly as deposit.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. The next question is from Nick Holmes, Société Générale.
Hi, Gerald. Nick Holmes at Soc Gen here. Just a couple of questions. First is, wondered if you could give us updates on the French floods in south France, what your exposure might be. Also, Hurricane Patricia. I know last year Odile cost you quite a lot in Mexico, and I guess Patricia is going to be quite a lot less than that. But your explanation there would be great. And then finally, on commercial P&C, I think you've been fairly cautious in your guidance on pricing, and yet tariff increases were up 2%. And that seems pretty good. And I just wondered whether you're becoming more optimistic about commercial pricing. Thanks very much.
Nick, starting first with your first question, the global cost of floods in France is roughly 600 million euros. We have a market share which is roughly 15%, And we have a reinsurance which is a quota share on 50%, which means that the net cost for AXA, let's say, would be 40 to 50 million net, 100 million gross, and roughly 40 to 50% net before tax. As far as Patricia is concerned, it's quite early to give you an update on this, but what I could say, and as you all noticed, and hopefully it's been much less dramatic than what we feared on Friday night. So that means that we don't expect it to be quite significant. It won't be zero, but not at all significant. Nothing to do with the deal at all.
Okay, that's very clear. Just out of interest, Gerald, have you increased your reinsurance covers in Mexico just in case we get more hurricanes?
Yes, we did.
Okay.
Yes, we did, because you remember that, and I mentioned it in previous presentations and calls, that we considered that we were not sufficiently protected, so it's done now.
Okay.
But it won't this time, which in fact is good news. On commercial PNC, yes, I would say you are right. On commercial PNC, what I can say is that we made a lot of pruning in different countries. Let's say it was the case in France, it was the case in Spain. It's been the case also in different countries in emerging countries and especially in Med-LA. So that means that at the cost of a decrease of the top line, we indeed increased our prices, which again is a good news, which means that we have this capacity. For example, the evolution up to now, the evolution of construction in France is quite good. So let's wait, but this is a trend, and this trend confirms our capacity. At the same time, you can notice that on commercial line, we still were slightly positive, which means that we had the capacity to increase our prices in this commercial line. So far, so good. So again, it's a strong focus on profitability.
Okay, that's very clear. Just one quick follow-up. Where in commercial lines would you be most concerned? Which geography would you say?
There is nothing specific, I would say. Nothing specific, because I believe that now, after all the changes that we have implemented and the price increases that we have implemented, Nick, this year, I consider that most of it has been, most of the negative situation have been restored. It doesn't mean that there won't be any areas where we could do better, but I believe that most has been done, which bodes quite well for next year. And so that's mostly it.
Okay, thank you very much. Very clear.
Thank you. The next question is from James Shaw, UBS.
Hi, good morning. Three quick ones from my side, please. Firstly, on asset management, I was surprised to see Q3 you had $3 billion of outflows, $2 billion at AllianceBernstein and $1 billion at AXA IM. Could you just shed some light on what's happening there? I mean, previous quarters had turned to inflows, so I was a bit surprised to see the outflows in Q3. Secondly, on Hong Kong APE, I understand there's been regulatory changes mainly around the disclosure of certain fees. I'm not seeing the same kind of declines at peers, though. A lot of peers are seeing improved efficiency and strong sales of products into mainland China. So could you just explain a little bit why your numbers don't compare with certain peers? And then my third question is just a quick update on the Department of Labor proposals. So the 10-30% decline in sales that you guided to earlier this year, is that still? Do you still feel comfortable with that kind of level? Thank you.
Okay, let's start first with your question on net inflows. So net outflows, that's true. We had 3 billion of net outflows in Q3. after a strong start of the year. So that means that on a cumulative basis at Q3, we have a strong net inflows. Let's say that at AB, I would say it's a consequence of the turmoil that we had during the summer coming from China, with some outflows of institutional and retail. On AXA IM, -1, it's partly due to it's not on Asia. It's mostly coming on other countries, and of which we have French Life, as you know, which represent part of it, and with the merger of Aviva, Aviva is reintegrating part of their business. So that's mostly it. On the second question on Hong Kong EPI, that's a good question, and you should take into account the fact that most of our peers, we have been quite successful in the past year in selling and developing a lot of unit-linked business in Hong Kong. And due to change in regulation, our new business in unit-linked in Hong Kong went down quite sharply, roughly a bit more than 55% in Q3. Why? Because there has been a change of regulation due to this disclosure of commissions. But most of our peers were not on unit-linked business; they were on traditional GA business, and which explains why they are still progressing. So, as far as we are concerned, for sure we posted a -10% APE for the first 9 months. We are working on new products that will, part of them being unit-linked but with different design, and others with other products that could be general account product also, but with a low risk and without any large economic capital consumption, I could say. So that's what I can tell you, and we are preparing ourselves to rebound in the future months, and especially in 16. An update on Dol. Unfortunately, I cannot tell you more than what we said beginning of August, meaning that we most probably will get news now mostly in. At the beginning of 16. As you know, there are a lot of lobbying coming from congressmen and so on, because they are the light taking the example of the UK products. It's not in the best interest of policyholders, especially the it's not the case for high net worth, but for the other one, it's not a good news. So let's wait, that's what I can say, and I cannot be more precise, unfortunately, on what we said last time, i.e. -10 to -30%. So let's wait.
Okay, very helpful. Thank you very much.
The next question is from Nicolo Dalla Palma, Exane BNP Paribas.
Yeah, hi, good morning, everyone. I had a couple of questions on P&C. The first one, if you can give us an indication on whether you're seeing some impact on churn in France from the new Hamon law. And the second one is concerning the reduction in net new contracts in Spain and Turkey, which has clearly been quite substantial. Could you give us at all the total number of contracts in Turkey and Spain to get a better feeling on how big in percentage the 558 would be in Turkey and the 279 reduction in Spain. Thank you.
Okay. Let's start with the Loi Hamon. We can consider that today, roughly speaking, we have 10% of our surrenders which are due to Loi Hamon for motor. And for household is roughly 9% of surrenders. So it's a bit early to judge what will be the global impact, but there is an impact. At the same time, keep in mind that there is obviously a negative impact because that means that the duration of our policyholders will go down, but an opportunity as well because we will have the opportunity to write new business. At the same time, keep in mind that the direct business is an opportunity for us as well to write much more direct business. And you can see that we have been globally we have been at plus 7% in direct business. And for France. For France, direct was at plus 7.9%, so let's say plus 8% for the first half, which in itself is a good news. So there are plus and minuses. That's exactly my point. About Spain and Turkey, we could say that on Turkey we had at the beginning of 2015. Let's say 4 million contracts, and we had net outflows, I would say, of 558,000 contracts for the first 9 months, which means 14% down. So that's mostly came from motor. For the reason we have already explained to you, that means that due to bodily injury, we increased our prices in Turkey by 70% this year. So you can see that it's, and we can expect that now we are at the right level of profitability. This concerned only TPL only. It doesn't concern our casco, because the casco was profitable and we didn't have to change the figures. Your last question was about Spain. Do you have the figure? I'm sorry, I have to come back to you because I don't have the Spanish figure. I have the global figure for Medele, but not for Spain.
Okay,
we'll come back to you. I'm sorry for that.
No problem. Thanks very much.
Okay, thank you.
Next question is from Blair Stewart, Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Thank you. A couple of questions left. Could you talk about the increase in the 17% increase in UK personal motor volumes? What's going on there? Secondly, could you talk about the incidence of claims inflation? You've talked a little bit about higher price increases, but what's happening to the situation net of claims inflation? Is that getting better or worse? And thirdly, just coming back to the UK, I just wonder, what's the point in writing huge volumes of practically zero margin business in Q3? The margin dropped about 1%, I think, discreet. So just wonder, what's the benefit of writing that business, Gerald?
Okay. Your question was about the increase of UK Motor. As you know, most of the UK Motor... we had an increase of 17%, and we had on average 10% price increase in motor in UK and Ireland. And on top of this, we had an increase in volumes in the UK of 7% and minus 1% in Ireland. So that's a combination of both, which makes that we have a strong performance. On top we have direct, and in direct we have a very strong performance as well, because in direct we had an increase in the UK of 12.2%. So you can see that we are performing quite well in the UK on both traditional and direct. Mainly due to this to price increases and also volumes, which is in itself a good news. About claims inflation, I would say that I don't believe that we could. That we have no specific news compared to what I told you last for the first half. That means that we don't see any real claims inflation starting in countries. Where we have claims inflation are the UK and Ireland, and for the other countries, nothing new and nothing specific since over the last 3 months. Mm-hmm. Your last question is about UK. I would say that there are products, of course, which are less profitable, but when you have opportunities to write large contracts and when it contributes to your profitability, i.e. covering some part of your fixed cost, then you do it. That's the first point. Second point, I repeat what I said at the beginning, which is, Blair, that it doesn't consume any capital almost. So that means that on a capital return basis, it's quite good.
Just coming back on a couple, Gerard, do you expect to revise your unit cost assumptions in the UK given you've taken on that volume, or has that already come through? Firstly, and secondly, coming back to UK motor, in such a competitive market, how can you get a 10% price increase plus 7% volume? It seems incredible.
Pay attention. Most of the capital increase was coming from Ireland. And as you know, Ireland is a very specific situation where prices increased a lot. And your other question was about the cost in the UK. Costs are adjusted, so that means that costs are already adjusted. Take this already into account in the NBV margin. So that's it. For Spain, we have 3.4 million contracts at the end of 15.
Okay.
14 at the end of 14, beginning of 15. So, yeah. Okay, Blair.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Michael Huttner, JP Morgan.
Yeah, thank you very much. I just wondered, could you possibly give us a walkthrough of the change in the solvency from 215 to 212? It's a lovely number, but a little bit of detail would be really, really helpful. Thank you.
Okay, we could say, and that's what I said. As you know, roughly speaking, and remember what I presented for the first half, the operational return represents roughly 10 points for a half year. So let's say that it's roughly 5 to 6 for a quarter, and we had a negative impact of lower equity market, lower interest rates, and that's the reason why we are moving from 215 to 212. So nothing new, relatively predictable. So that's what I can tell you. That's nothing specific more to say.
Excellent. And would there be this is economic solvency, and on the 3rd of December, and it'll be lovely to see you in London, you'll talk about solvency too. Are there differences we should think about?
We said that, if your question is what about the final regulatory solvency that we will share with you on the 3rd of December, I cannot say more than what Denis and myself, we told you. That means that it could be plus minus 10%. So that's the points. Points. So nothing new on that side, but let's wait a few more weeks and you will have the final figures.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from Rolf Hepken, KBW.
Yes, hi, good morning, guys. Just the two things. One is on the solvency ratio. Again, we know that you are neutralizing the sensitivity to corporate credit spreads by implementing the illiquidity premium. I wonder whether you could share with us what the impact of that was. In other words, where would your solvency ratio have been had you not implemented the illiquidity premium to neutralize spread sensitivity? And second, just two details on P&C rate increases. One is in personal lines in Switzerland. We see in the third quarter an acceleration of negative trends, if that makes sense. And I was wondering whether you could comment on that. And in commercial lines in Asia, the third quarter was the first time that we see a notable swing from increases to rate decreases. I would just welcome perhaps some commentary on these dynamics. Thank you.
Okay. First of all, relative to your first question, spread didn't move so much in the first quarter, so in the third quarter between half year and 9 months. So Raf, I can tell you that the impact of liquidity premium is very minor. It's really what I said. It's really the impact of interest rates that went down quite significantly and equity markets. But as far as the spreads are concerned, nothing specific to mention. About the P&C market and the negative trends that we highlight on the personal in Switzerland, you know that I would say that, and as you know, it's an extremely profitable market, and you cannot understand this move as a softening of the market. Not at all. Nothing specific to mention. We had a slight decrease, but inflation in Switzerland is negative, so rates are negative, and so on and so forth. So nothing specific, and it remains an excellent and very profitable market. On commercial in Asia.
Yeah, can you repeat your question, Ralph, on this one?
Oh, yeah, it was just that I noticed that the premium rates in commercial lines in Asia have become negative for the first time, well, in recent history. I was just wondering what was going on there.
No specific. No, we should go into a bit more detail, but yeah. I've nothing in mind, you know, that would be a matter of worry on that side. So we should have a more granular. I believe that it's more through a more granular, detailed analysis that I could we could give explanation. But it's a lot of plus and minuses, and I don't see any specific and real trend that you could extrapolate for the future as far as this is concerned.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from John Hawking, Morgan Stanley.
Morning, everybody. I've just got two questions, please. I wonder if you could comment on reinvestment yields and how that's trended over the quarter and what your current view is given what's happened with spreads over the summer period and also the fallback in yields. And then secondly, just to clarify, on the 3rd of December, are we going to get a sort of fully approved Solvency II number based on the 9 months balance sheet? Is that the intention? Thank you.
Okay, on the reinvestment yields, as you know, I mentioned to you last time for the first half, I told you that we had been reinvesting on average at 2%. Indeed, at the end of at the end of September, we should be maybe slightly above, but it's a matter of basis points. That means that in other words, if we will benefit, but it will be small. We will benefit from higher spreads because you know that spreads went up, but spreads went up quite recently in October mostly. but it is offset by low rates. So I believe I'm quite conscious, I'm quite confident in the fact that we won't be lower than 2%. Maybe we could be somewhere between 2 and 2.1, but something around this, you see. So pretty in line, so that means that nothing, I'm not worried at all because we planned and we assumed that we would be around this level. But for the time being, I cannot say that we'll be much above this level. About Solvency II, yes, we will update you on the 3rd. We will update you on our on the levels and on the level of solvency, including at the end of September, for sure.
Thank you. Can I just come back on the investment yields? Has your risk appetite changed in any way, given what we've seen in high yield? And obviously, there's been some sort of high-profile spread widening on some single names in Europe. Have you changed your approach? Because I know you've recently been quite short duration, high yield. I just wonder whether you changed that view at all.
Yes, we have invested in short duration high yield. As I told you last time, we consider that it's a good risk. Does it mean that globally our risk appetite increased? I wouldn't say so. I would say that the big difference is that whereas in the first half of the year, we were quite keen on investing in illiquid assets, and we are still doing it. But now, the opportunity for corporate bonds is more positive due to the spread increase. You notice that, for example, we had an increase of roughly over the last weeks of roughly 30 basis points on a single NA, which indeed is a good news in that sense that it makes that the return, taking into account the cost of equity, the return is better than it was before, and we are investing in such class of assets.
Okay, that's excellent. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. The next question is from Andrew Crean, Autonomous Research.
Good morning, Gerald. I had a question sort of on the longer term side. I'm just looking back to 2007. I think your revenues, ex exchange, have grown by only 1% from 2007 to 2015. And over that period, I think on my numbers, your underlying earnings will have grown 13%, although most of that, I think, is probably positive exchange. And so I suppose the point I'm making is that over the long term, your profits grow in line with your revenues. And I was just wondering, as you look forward and look forward to the next sort of ambition AXA, whether in order to grow profits at sort of 5 to 10%, you need to accelerate the revenues, or whether you think that in a digital world it is possible to grow profits meaningfully faster than revenues.
It's both. That means that first of all, we should say that over the period that you describe, we have been hit by financial conditions which have been quite difficult. Over the long term, it's both. It's without any doubt still an increase in the profitability, and we have still levers in order to increase our profitability both on P&C side and on life side, of which without any doubt, I would mention the technical side, our mix of products, especially in life, and some further expense savings. And at the same time, it's a top line. That means that we can expect that over the next years, we will have opportunities. And I would like to mention the fact that we will have some opportunity to cross-sell and upsell. And that's all the what we are expecting. You know that we have been investing a lot in digital, 950 million over the last 3 years, 450 million this year. So we are expecting a lot on that side. So that's why I'm telling you that it will come from both sides.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. The final question is from Farooq Hanif, Citi.
Hi, everybody. Thanks very much. I just wanted to ask a little bit about margins from an IFRS point of view. earnings point of view in the unit link business. So obviously you've had this big growth in the UK, which is a very kind of low margin unit linked market. And if you look at 2014, 2013 kind of numbers for the margin that you make on average unit linked liabilities, you're in the kind of 65 to 70 basis point level versus, you know, close to, I would have thought, you know, closer to zero in the UK in the corporate pensions business. I was wondering, you know, are you confident, generally speaking, that you can maintain that level of high margin and unit linked going forward, given growth your potential in the UK in particular, or do you see that margin coming down? Thanks.
Oh, for the time being, I don't expect on average that the traditional unit-linked business, especially the individual unit-linked business, because here we are speaking from a very specific corporate type, we will keep the same level of margin. I would not say that it's forever, but at least we could say that in the foreseeable future, I don't expect it to go down.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. We currently have no further questions.
Okay, well, thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks to all. Have a good day.
Have a good day.
Thanks for attending this call.
See you on December 3rd.
Yes, see you on December 3rd. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for attendance. This call has been concluded. You may now disconnect.